Stop laughing. This is erotic.
I'm on a new medication and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah. I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did. Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
This is an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Bethany Watson, your 2,400-mile road trip taking, Hampton Inn free hot breakfast eating. Our cat is amazing in the car, and we're doing the trip again for Christmas, friend.
And I'm Kathleen Heaney, your dumpster diving at Pottery Barn outlet, eating soup for every meal. I am crushing so hard on King Triton. Nom nom, fishy fishy.
And every week, Kathleen and I get together to discuss our lives and what's weird in the world, and we invite you to join us. Kathleen, what are you talking about today?
Today I am discussing the truth about lab-grown diamonds.
Oh my goodness. Would these be considered conflict-free diamonds?
Yes, Bethany. They would be considered conflict-free, although they do not come without their caveats. And I think a lot of people are sort of in the dark as to what lab-grown diamonds really are. And I want to set the record straight.
Awesome. And I am talking about dangerous games to play in the dark.
Ooh.
This is a book I got from one of our favorite websites, Uncommon Goods, and they are a partner of ours too, although they are not sponsoring this.
Yeah.
It's a book by Lucia Peters, and it's a guide to summoning spirits, divining the future, and invoking the supernatural. This is a book I would have killed to have when I was a teenager, doing like slumber parties.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go through some of the rituals she teaches you how to do.
So you're talking about spooky games to play in the dark. I was hoping you were going to talk about like sexy games to play in the dark.
No, no, no. I'm too filled with shame to do that kind of thing, Kathleen.
Take your clothes off and pretend that I look like Cindy Crawford.
So Kathleen, this is the first podcast we're recording since Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I have to ask you, how did your Thanksgiving at your mother's house go?
I can't talk about it, Bethany.
You have to.
I have PTSD. Bethany, on Thanksgiving morning, I woke up with no water in my apartment.
Yeah.
Not a single drop. Most of the city, most of Hoboken, where I live, we were all turning on our faucets that morning to make coffee and make whatever that we needed to make for the day. Not a single drop of water.
Hoboken famously is falling apart.
Yeah. It's really weird because then I get a call from my mother who's like, water's coming through the ceiling.
Oh, no. Okay. At what point?
Yeah.
Gentle listener, if this is the first time you're listening or you're listening backwards, Kathleen, your mother thought how many people were originally coming to Thanksgiving at her house.
Okay, she knew at least a week in advance that 14 people were coming.
Because she originally thought it was going to be, what, four?
Four.
And you invited 14.
What's 10 more, Bethany? I mean,
significant.
There's enough food to go around. It's totally fine. What I want to know, Bethany, is how was it seeing your family?
Don't change the subject. I have at least 10 more questions for you about your Thanksgiving.
So it went off not without a hitch. But it went off and everybody ate and we all got food on the table at the same time and it was all hot and we got to like play games. And it turned out that I put a lot of undue stress on myself, as a lot of people do during the holidays.
Yes.
And I worry about little shit that literally nobody else cares about. And it was fine. As long as there was a turkey, we were all going to be okay.
Did all the chairs you ordered come?
They all came. And I'm going to tell you, at first my mom was horrified. She's like, why do we have so many chairs? And I'm like, because you're going to need them down the line.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, Bethany, I'll tell you this. There was a pattern chair that I bought, a little bench that I bought for her house. And she's like, nah, I'm not crazy about the style. I don't know about the pattern. And then she went to her friend's house and her friend had an old lady house. And she came back and immediately texted me, love these benches. Love them. Worth every penny.
May I ask how much all of the new chairs cost?
Bethany, my mom sent me a very generous Zelle yesterday to share the cost with me.
That was very nice.
Yeah, very nice. But how is it seeing your family after so many months away? Was there any fights? Did anyone wear any terrible outfits?
No. Well, my younger sister wore a horrible sweater to Thanksgiving, but she did it on purpose. My sister found a felt vest at Goodwill. And yeah. the felt vest had felt cat outlines cross-stitched onto it, like stitched with big, obvious stitches. So it looks like something was stitched on. It looks yes. like the kind of sweater a kindergarten teacher would wear. And my sister is very metropolitan and very stylish.
Yeah.
And so to have her show up wearing this felt green cat vest.
Amazing.
Was nothing but statement making and incredible.
I love goofy stuff like that. Yeah. It just warms my heart when people don't take life so seriously.
Completely. And she knows who she is. She loves cats. And so it's like, you know, she's there's no faking it going on with her. She's you love her for knowing her. But it was wonderful. We did two Thanksgivings. We did Thanksgiving yeah. at my mom's new house because she and my stepdad, you know, pared things down a little bit and got into a smaller yeah. space.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. How's the new house? Do you like it?
Love it. I love it even more than their old house. There's just really? Something about new, fresh energy. There's more yeah. light in this house.
Light makes a difference.
It's a huge difference. And I learned something really helpful. If you are someone who is looking for a new place to live,
yeah.
usually if they're showing you the space, they'll turn all the lights on. Turn all of the lights off when you go through like, it.
Could you see the dust bunnies?
No. It shows you how much natural light will come in the house. Because that's what my brother-in-law was doing when they were looking for this new home. And my mom said it made all the difference in the world because she realized truly how like shadowy their old house was and how much natural yeah. light came in this new house. And you just feel better as a result. So it was great.
Oh, yeah.
And we drove 1,200 miles there, 1,200 miles home. Took us 2 days each way. It was wonderful. We saw a lot of Ohio and Indiana.
It is so interesting how Midwesterners measure distance because you say 1,200 miles, that you might as well be speaking Greek to me. Because on the East Coast, we measure distance and time.
No, that's actually a Midwest thing too. The only reason I say 1,200 miles is because I know what it was. I would normally say it's 2 days.
So how many hours a day do you have to drive from New York to Minnesota? Like how many hours and then do you break? And then how many hours after that?
It was 10 hours the first day.
Oof.
We stayed overnight in Ohio at a lovely Hampton Inn with a pancake and waffle griddle for your morning breakfast.
Is it the machine where it goes down the conveyor belt and it cooks as it's going down the conveyor belt?
No, but that sounds amazing.
Oh, so you had like one of those griddles. Did you get to flip it?
You get to flip it. Yeah.
Yes.
It's really yes. exciting. You feel like you're doing something like a pioneer, like a real pioneer woman.
There is no better smell than going into an ice cream shop where they're making their own cones on that griddle machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just smells like cookies and vanilla and everything that you'll never amount to, but you still enjoy the daydream of it anyway.
Completely. The future seems wide open and nothing but optimism when you're in a waffle place.
Ooh.
So it's 10 hours the first day, 9 hours the next day. And then reversed on the way home. But it was very doable.
Yeah.
And Minerva did great. She mostly spent the time in the carrier, which was really cute because we put her litter box on the floor of the car on one of the passenger sides.
Yeah.
And she was such a good girl. Like she would, you know, sleep and then she'd kind of crawl out of her carrier, walk around, look out the back rear view window, walk around. And then she'd like go into the litter box, go to the bathroom, like just like such a good girl who was game for whatever.
Oh.
And then when she was done, she would just go back into her carrier and sleep for another, you know, 8 hours. She was so, so good.
She's just a chill cat. Have you ever been on a plane with her?
Never. I don't know if I could. Her little heart.
Oh.
I don't know. Have you ever traveled with your cats?
I have never traveled with them more than 20 minutes to my mom's house.
How do they do in 20 minutes?
Not well. But you know, I feel like if they had time to really lock in to a long car ride, the very beginning of it wouldn't be so jarring. But I had a friend who went on a trip to Puerto Rico and came home with a dog. This tiny little, cute little 12-year-old Chihuahua senior dog that needed a good home, came back to America to live out the rest of her years. And she's so tiny, Bethany. She's smaller than any of the cats you and I own. And my friend just put her in a little carrier.
Yep.
She did perfect on the plane. And it's really, truly amazing when you have a pet that you can travel with like that and just take them anywhere. But not peacocks.
Do you know, wait, is there a story about traveling peacocks?
Yeah. You don't know the story about how, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago, someone tried to get through an airport with their support peacock.
That's right. That's right. That's amazing.
I know you don't have Netflix anymore, Bethany, but
no.
Everybody in the Acquired Taste Facebook fan group. By the way, we have a new fan group. You can go on our Facebook page and link over from there and join it. Everyone has been equating your personality to the new Wednesday Addams series.
I need to watch this. I need to get Netflix just for this. I've been watching the dance scene.
Yes.
Over and over and over and over again.
So many one-liners in that show. I'm like, oh, Bethany wrote this because it reminds me of you. She tried to, and I'm not giving anything away. This is in the trailer, but Wednesday tried to kill some bullies who were on the swim team or whatever. She dropped her pet piranhas in the pool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And someone was like, "How that might have been on your record. How would you feel about that?" And she's like, "Terrible. They would know that I didn't finish the job." And I'm like, oh, that is definitely a Bethany-ism.
Oh, Wednesday Addams is iconic. And the show looks so good.
Style iconics.
Yes.
Filmed in Romania. Apparently a lot of Netflix shows are filmed in Romania, in Romanian castles. Netflix has a thing for that.
I think it's also probably cheaper. There have been a couple of horror films I've watched, like not high budget, but just like high profile, big star horror films filmed in Romania. And I think I think it might be cheaper. But how would you feel if you got cast in something and maybe it wasn't, you didn't know anybody involved. It wasn't like a big budget. It was an indie film. And they were like, you need to fly to Romania.
Oh, that would be tough. You would have to make at least one friend.
Yeah. And I would be like, I don't know anything about Romania or anywhere because I'm a dumb American, but like, am I safe?
I know. What was it on Schitt's Creek?
Yep. I was just thinking about that.
Was that Romania where she had to fly to film her horror film?
To film the crows have eyes too. I don't remember. It was some like Eastern European, I think, country. And yeah, it's just cheap. It's cheap. The crows have eyes, so you'd better not look them in it.
I purchased Home Alone on Apple Movies, whatever, so I can watch it all the time. And what's that actress's name? Catherine O'Hara?
Catherine O'Hara.
She's so good in every single thing that she does.
Yeah.
And even in Home Alone, which was eons ago before she was super, super famous, because Home Alone is kind of like, was not her breakout role, but it was the role that everybody knew her for.
Completely.
She was just so good in that movie. I can't get over it.
She's one of my icons. I think last year, the year before, I think she was the Canadian equivalent of being knighted.
Oh.
You know how like in the UK, it's like you get knighted or you become a dame, I think.
Yes, yes.
She got the Canadian equivalent of that.
Oh.
And it was really funny because you have to like stand on this, I don't know, tiny little stage that's like separate from everyone else. And you just stand there while they read off your achievements. And then I don't know who was reading her achievements. The prime minister? Not, but whatever. And the person speaking was like, and her iconic role on Schitt's Creek. And everyone sort of Twittered and Catherine O'Hara kind of pursed her lips. And I was like, this is wonderful.
Remember when we worked in radio and you couldn't say Schitt's Creek on the radio?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because even though it's not the same shit, it's still shit.
Dan Levy was on some show being interviewed. Maybe it was Jimmy Fallon. And the rule that the producers had come up with and like the TV people was that if they said Schitt's Creek, they had to show the title as a lower third. So like it had to say on the screen Schitt's Creek so people understood that it was spelled differently.
America is so stupid.
I don't know, man.
Dumb.
We're trying to protect our children from the word shit, from the last name shit, and from learning about anything that has to do with, you know,
bathroom things.
Kathleen, I was thinking this morning about how I need to start my holiday shopping, and I got this vacuous, empty feeling in my chest, just feeling so overwhelmed, not knowing what people want and not knowing what to do.
And I know that one of the hardest people to buy for is the person that you're in a relationship with, especially if you live together, because it's hard to surprise someone with something that's truly unique. And that is why, Bethany, I have the best idea for Skylight Frames.
What's that?
It's a digital picture frame. It's gorgeous. It has this beautiful mat. Comes in this black frame. Put it on the wall. It's great for grandparents who are sort of like not really tech savvy. Here is my new idea for Skylight Frame.
Okay.
Give it to your partner, somebody who you share sexual experiences with.
Okay.
Preload it with really provocative, gorgeous, tasteful photos of yourself and then make a spot for it to hang on the wall right next to your bed.
That's a super good idea. I love the idea of giving a skylight frame to the people in your life who are hard to shop for. Definitely make sure you've preloaded it with the right photographs for the right person, because skylight frames are also so good for in-laws,
yeah,
grandparents, people who are super hard to shop for. And the great thing about skylight frames is that you don't have to just preload them and then that's one and done. You have an email address or the app that you can either send pictures to or upload pictures to, and the pictures immediately appear in the skylight frame. So the person who has it can swipe through and see new pictures all the time.
My mom has a skylight frame and the app does a really good job reminding me that I haven't uploaded something in a while. So I upload pictures of her grandchildren, aka my cats.
And if it's someone that you're living with, you can upload fun pictures to surprise them.
Bow chicka bow wow.
Exactly. But just again, make sure you're uploading the right photos to the right skylight frame, because your father-in-law does not need to see that.
And if you give it to your grandparents, everybody in your family can have access to it. So grandma and grandpa get to see pics from every single family in the family.
By the way, you can get two size options, either the original 10-inch or a new large 15-inch frame. And it's super duper easy to set up, even for people who are not tech savvy.
100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you don't love your skylight, they'll offer you a full refund.
So now, as a special offer, you can get $15 off your purchase of a skylight frame when you go to skylightframe.com and enter the code TASTE.
That's right. To get $15 off of your purchase of a skylight frame, just go to skylightframe.com and enter the code TASTE.
That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com, promo code TASTE.
Bethany.
What?
The truth about lab-grown diamonds.
Gosh, gosh, gosh. Truth bomb.
It's engagement season.
Is it really? Oh, yay. Who's getting engaged?
Well, I was going to ask you, if you had to pick an engagement ring, like if Dennis weren't going to get married, but maybe you were going to have like a promise ceremony, like a grown up sure. Dennis brother or something.
Yeah. Some sort of like, you're stuck with me for the rest of your life. Yeah. Just not according to the state.
Yeah, or like maybe like a civil union or whatever, you know?
Yeah. An excuse to buy an awesome ring.
Yeah. And a tax break too, right?
Yeah, totally.
What kind of ring would you want?
I would want, oh gosh. There's this company in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Called Catbird. Yeah. I would want one of them crazy Catbird rings that looks like a full spray of constellations across your entire finger.
Yeah. They're beautiful.
They're stunning. And I think that Dennis and I have said that when we sell our first show, we're going to buy Catbird rings.
Oh.
I would want that. And of course, that's like diamonds. Uh-huh. But I think I'd be okay. I kind of don't care what stone is in it. I more want it to be awesome looking and super unique.
When I really think about it, I have an engagement diamond ring. I got it because that's what everybody else was getting.
Totally. Yep.
And I was 24 when I got engaged. So 23 when Neil and I were talking about it. And I was so impressionable. And I think that if I had to choose again, I would go with an emerald. In my wise age of mid-30s.
Now, is that your birthstone or is it just like because you love color?
Because I love color. I love the color green. And growing up, my mom didn't have a diamond engagement ring. She has actually something, Bethany, that would like fit into your narrative. She's got a black star sapphire. Yeah.
Wait, I don't even know what that is. Let me look it up.
It's this black stone. And when you look directly into the center of it, this yellow star pops out at you.
Shut up.
Yeah. And my dad got it in Thailand during the Vietnam War when he was over there.
Black star sapphire. Oh my gosh, this is beautiful.
Right? They're really cool. And a lot of the pictures that come up are set in gold settings, yellow gold, which is something that I would do too, now that I know that I like yellow gold better than platinum or whatever.
Sure.
And so the whole point of this conversation is, it is engagement season. But why do you really want that diamond? Do you want it because society tells you that you want a diamond? Or do you just really like diamonds? And I'm going to lean towards people want diamonds because it's a status symbol that you're locked down, that your partner had enough money to buy you this ring.
Yes.
And that is why I would like to introduce everybody to the concept of, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably with it. You've already heard of lab-grown diamonds, but maybe you don't exactly know what they are.
Yeah, I just imagine they put something in a petri dish and they come back, like, I don't know, a couple years later, and there's just like a, you know, a rock in there.
So, Bethany, it actually takes only a matter of weeks.
What?
And this is how lab-grown diamonds are made. You take a sliver of a previously made lab-grown diamond. You put it in this waffle maker-looking thing. But every...
like the one at the Hampton Inns?
Yes, yes, exactly. But every single divot that holds the syrup is where you put a diamond seed. And it's basically a piece of a lab-grown diamond that's already been made. And then you put it in this pressure cooker type tool and gases are added into the griddle, the diamond griddle. And it basically simulates what happens with a diamond underneath the earth. Because, you know, diamonds are made because there is carbon underneath the earth. And then carbon mixes with all these gases and they are put under very tight pressure in that space in the earth where the devil lives. And he lives in that castle with the lava. A moat.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's where diamonds are
and
from.
It gets really, really hot and the pressure gets really, really, I don't know, pressure
pressurized.
Hard, tight.
Tight. It gets so tight.
Gets real tight and then boop, a diamond pops out. But when it comes from the earth, it's like a very slow moving vegetarian burrito that Mother Earth has eaten and then she farts out a diamond.
I'm feeling triggered
and attacked
at the same time.
Takes millions of years. Well, the same gases and the same heat and the same pressure go into this diamond griddle for lab-grown diamonds. And in a matter of like 8 to 12 weeks, you can go from nothing to having a big fat rock on your finger.
Okay, casting aside, you know, just like the issue of society has told us diamonds are valuable. And so now is a status symbol.
Yeah.
What's keeping us... I assume they're less expensive then too, because it's like millions of years versus a fortnight.
Bethany, lab-grown diamonds are anywhere in between 25 to 50% less than mined diamonds.
Okay.
I want to be very specific with my terminology. I don't want to call them natural diamonds because natural kind of has this connotation, you know, that people like to use when we're talking about food or products, like all natural. And mined diamonds, it's important for me to call them mined diamonds in the context of this conversation because mined is a word that makes you think about other implications and natural makes it like really floofy, like snow over a dirty field.
Yeah. Like natural has a certain level of morality attached to it.
Uh-huh.
And calling something a natural diamond, although it might technically be true, it lends it a level of morality that is not there in real life.
And I didn't realize this, but lab-grown diamonds have been commercially available since the 1980s.
Whoa!
I know, right? They were invented in 1954 by General Electric. But really in the past couple of years, lab-grown diamonds, because people are thinking about things that are good for the environment, people are thinking about sustainability. And no matter what you're mining, you're digging down deep into Mother Earth and you're taking out a natural resource. And so whether or not that resource can replenish varies from material to material, but you're still taking something from the earth. And so people are really starting to think about sustainability when it comes to their jewelry, which I love. And I also love that people are really into buying estate jewelry, which is what I did when I was looking for a diamond ring.
Yeah.
But as a result, the global lab-grown diamond market is projected to reach $10 billion in sales this year. So $10 billion this year by 2030, which is, I don't know, 7 years away. $49.9 billion.
That's crazy. So, and if this is out of order, please let me know.
Yeah, yeah.
But this sounds like a nothing but a win.
Kind of.
You said that it's not a complete win.
There, it's not without its caveats, and we're going to get into this.
Okay.
But first, I want to, and I cannot stress this enough, they are real diamonds. Just because they aren't grown, quote unquote, in the ground, lab diamonds are chemically and structurally exactly the same thing as diamonds made in the Earth's core. They are not synthetic in any way.
So I could use these lab-grown diamonds to cut a perfect circle into a pane of window glass.
Yes,
and
yes.
Pop it out and escape from my, you know, prison cell the way they do in movies.
Absolutely, Bethany. Your nosy best friend can go shove it. You don't even have to tell her that you got a lab-grown diamond. She's never going to be able to tell. Even most jewelers can't tell the difference without specific testing.
Whoa.
I know. And there's apparently like this machine. Let's just call it the diamond identifier machine for us laymen.
Sure.
When you put both a mined diamond and a lab-grown diamond in this diamond machine, it's like, diamond. They're both diamonds.
I see no difference.
Yes, I know. So lab-grown diamonds, and I don't exactly know how this works. Apparently, something is written on the diamond. I could be wrong about this, but I read an article that said it's got a mark on the diamond's girdle.
What?
I didn't know diamonds needed girdles.
No.
I don't think anybody needs a girdle. Let your body be as your body is.
I don't know. I kind of like a good corset because I just feel like my internal organs are all pulled in.
So there's a little label on the outermost edge of the diamond's girdle that says it was lab made just for posterity. But when you have it on your finger, Bethany, you cannot tell.
So that's amazing.
Yeah. And Pandora, you know, the jewelry company Pandora.
Yeah, I know what job you have, and that job is nurse.
Pandora is moving in the direction of only using lab grown diamonds.
Good.
Because they're looking to be more sustainable. And a company like Pandora, they attract customers who are interested in being good to Mother Earth. So it's just really good for business. And Bethany, just like mined diamonds, lab-grown diamonds come in a variety of different qualities and price points. So, you know, those things that diamond people look for, color, clarity, cut, lab-grown diamonds are the same. So it's not like every lab-grown diamond pops out of the diamond-making machine looking sparkly and like absolutely perfect. It is much like the process of Mother Earth, where diamonds have varieties. It's the same for lab-grown diamonds.
Okay, this is, so I see no issues.
No issues, right?
Yeah.
So the complaint is by people who are, I don't know, purists, people who are in the mining industry. They're like, well, the value of a natural diamond will always be higher than a lab-grown diamond. But here's where you really have to dig down and ask yourself, what is the value of this ring anyway?
Right. Yes, exactly. Versus like the human lives.
Yeah.
And the destruction being caused by the diamond industry.
Yeah, because literally it was De Beers in 1947 that was like, let's come up with this marketing campaign and we'll make everybody think that diamonds are really rare and we'll put a high price tag on them and everyone's a sucker and they're going to pay.
Because diamonds aren't actually rare, right?
They are a gemstone. They are a precious stone. I don't know. Rare, the context of that word differs for a lot of people, especially now that you can grow them in a lab. And when you have this diamond on your finger, are you really worried about the resale value unless you know that you're absolutely going to divorce this person?
Completely. And I've always struggled with the idea of getting as big of a diamond as possible.
Yeah.
To like, what, impress your friends? Like, I know somebody who is married and he was really annoyed because his wife was badgering him to get her like an upgraded diamond ring.
Well, Bethany, I have now sent Neil links to upgraded lab-grown diamonds because they're so much cheaper.
But I feel like, so maybe this is something I don't understand. What's the point of having like as big of a diamond as possible?
There's no point at all. Let's put into context, I want to say about 10 years ago, if you were going to buy a 2-carat ring with a good to perfect quality, it would cost you anywhere in between $15,000 and $35,000, right? Jeez.
Okay.
I know. 2 carats. I've seen people with 4 carats. I have friends who have 5 carats. Like, just an insane amount of money to just wear on your finger. And to me, it's just like an insurance risk. If you have a diamond ring that's so big that when you get on the subway, you have to turn it inwards.
Right.
Into the palm of your hand so you don't get mugged.
Right.
What's the point?
It's like carrying your Picasso around. Why are you doing that? It could get ruined.
Yeah. So 10 years ago, because I don't know much about the prices of diamonds these days, though it has fallen because lab-grown diamonds are more prevalent now. Yeah. Now you can get an almost perfect / perfect lab-grown diamond, 2 carats, for $12,000 to $15,000, somewhere in there.
I mean, that's that still sounds so expensive. Like,
it still is a lot of money, but in some cases, it's like 30%, 40, 45% less than a mined diamond.
I'm actually surprised that the prices aren't lower. Because mined diamonds, like, you have to go to a different part of the world. You have to hire labor. You have to, you know, dig.
Yeah.
And the price of, like, getting it all back, whatever, whatever. Versus, like, do we just, I'm guessing we have these labs in America?
So I'm going to get into that. First, I want to point out that the issues that the mined diamond industry are having, they're saying, like, well, you know, blood diamonds, what was that, 2006, the motion picture starring Leo D.
Yeah.
That movie, after that movie came out, a lot of awareness has been brought to conflict diamonds, diamonds that have caused civil war in war-torn countries, diamonds that are extracted illegally, or human rights practices, or human rights are not thought about in the extraction, and they are not following healthy environmental practices. So conflict diamonds, like in the movie Blood Diamond, a lot of mine diamond companies have worked really hard to move away from that, to make sure that the people that work for them, the people that are mining these diamonds, are treated fairly. So the natural diamond industry calls those ethical diamonds.
Okay.
It's like, you know, it's putting icing on a shitty cake.
Sure. Yeah. At least you got icing on it.
Except that cake costs so much money.
That shitty cake is going to cost you like $1.2 million.
The mine diamond industry is like, well, you know, we've worked to make them ethical, whatever that means to them. You know, it's a definition that differs for everybody. Mm-hmm. And also, they're like, there are 10 million people working in the diamond industry. To me, that still doesn't off-put the bad effects of diamond mining, like what it's doing to the environment, like deforestation, soil disturbance, air emissions, water pollution, big time water pollution, because you still have to dig deep into the ground and you contaminate fresh water, bodies of fresh water where you're mining diamonds, with soil, and then plants and animals can't get the fresh water that they need. A lot of mining companies have also done things like rerouting rivers and exposing riverbeds so they can get down to the diamonds, and it really has a catastrophic effect on local wildlife.
Just so we can be like, but my finger has a big ring on it because my partner loves me enough. Like, that's so stupid.
And lab-grown diamonds aren't like this magical thing. There is a company that's really tapping into true sustainable diamonds, but lab-grown diamonds, the majority of them as we know them today, they still take a lot of energy to create. But I think I read that to create one carat is like the energy equivalent of making three pairs of jeans, which to me doesn't seem like a whole lot.
Yeah, I guess that's not something that that's not a good equivalent because we don't know what that takes.
Yeah.
If it was like the cost of powering your home for 3 days, that's different. But if it's like the cost of running three horses across the state of Colorado.
And obviously there are so many things that go into making a pair of jeans, like milling the cotton, and
what are they,
keeping the lights on in the factory where the jeans are made, and the microwave where the people who make the jeans heat up their lunch.
I don't know what that equivalent means.
To me it is silly. Obviously anything more sustainable is the direction that this earth needs to go in, and just leave things be. If it's deep inside the ground, don't mess up everything around it. Don't be like me, the DIYer, fixing things that don't need to be fixed and just making more of a mess.
But I also just kind of wish that instead of like, we all want what we want.
Yeah.
Even if it's bad for the earth. So give us a different option of the thing we want. I kind of wish people could be like, what other options besides we have to have diamonds? Like, I like the idea of estate jewelry, great. Or, you know, just there's another statement ring you can have. Get a tattoo, whatever you want to freaking do. But it's like, but they got to be diamonds or I'm not going to consider saving the earth.
Diamonds are literally only worth what they're worth because people are in a tizzy about them.
Yes.
And I wish that people would dig down deeper inside their souls and ask themselves what they truly want. Do you want a piece of flashy bling bling to show off to your friends to say, hey, I've made it in this world, or is it really a symbol of your love with your right. your partner?
I promise it's not a symbol of your love for your partner. I promise you that.
It's not. It's not truly, unless you're marrying for money and you know you're going to need to cut ties and sell whatever you can get during the relationship.
Totally.
Then that's a business move. I
right.
get that.
Right. If this is an investment in leaving your partner ultimately, then okay, mm-hmm. fine. You know what? We live in a consumer world. You know, you have to do what you have to do to get by. But
yeah.
if you're like going in this to win this and your proof of your husband's love for you is that he bought you a big ring, that's a problem.
And you can't tell by the naked eye looking at a mine diamond versus a lab dime. You absolutely cannot tell. So why not choose the sustainable option?
Why not choose the plastic option? I promise you, you and your friends cannot tell the difference between a real diamond and a cubic zirconium, whatever that is made out of. I can't tell. I promise you, you can't tell either. Go to frickin' Claire's Boutique. Get yourself a cubic zirconia ring.
Yeah.
Get
yeah.
yourself a matching tiara.
I know.
For so much cheaper. You can get it for like $12.
I have traveled before where I don't wear my engagement ring anymore because it doesn't fit me.
No, for sustainability, Kathleen.
Yeah. For sustainability. And my poor mother, when I was asking her questions about her ring, she's like, why do you want it? Do you want to take it from my finger and put it in a different setting? And I'm like, no, mommy, you have arthritis. We're never getting that ring off your finger.
No. It's stuck there forever.
It's never happening. But it's just this whole rigmarole around, like, what does it actually mean to you? And a lot of people are hard pressed because they thought of their once upon a time, their diamond purchases as an investment in their future. And they're coming to find that the more lab grown diamonds become available to people, the less that their mined diamonds are going to be worth. And I think that's a tough pill to swallow for mm-hmm. people, but it is a much better pill for the environment. It is. It is. But here's something to think about. Because lab-grown diamonds are not, they don't just poof appear. It's not like you put them under an incubator that's plugged into the wall like a fourth grade chicken egg experiment thingamajigger. They do take energy. And so it's important for companies that are making lab-grown diamonds to make sure the factories in which they are created are also green, sustainable, forward-thinking factories. Mm. Because then if they're not, what's the point?
Right.
And so that is sort of what I talk about when I say caveats. Lab-grown diamonds are not without their caveats. And when the technology becomes more available, you know there are going to be factories overseas like pumping out lab-grown diamonds at more available prices because they'll be like maybe a little bit less quality. And it's really hard to regulate the industry as a whole, making sure that every single lab-grown diamond factory isn't creating carbon emissions mm-hmm. that are the same as mining it from the ground.
Yeah, completely. And it's like all of these regulatory agencies are always really far behind.
Yes.
Because, you know, you don't know what people are going to do to try to
yeah.
skirt the law until they start skirting the law.
Because everybody wants to make a buck, myself included.
Yeah, I would like to make $1 million.
I would like to make $10 million, Bethany.
I would like to make $1.
So that's the thing about lab-grown diamonds. When they're done by companies that truly care about the environment and the whole package, not just the making of the diamond. So there is one company, Bethany, that is a superstar in the lab-grown diamond industry, and they're taking things further.
Ooh.
It's called Ether Diamonds.
Okay.
Their diamonds are made from carbon sucked from the atmosphere.
That's crazy.
So they are less expensive than mined diamonds, but more costly than other lab-grown varieties because they're created with carbon dioxide air capture technology.
This is something crazy. I read something about a guy who's making meat out of yeah. carbon from the air. I think
yes.
you're the one who told me about that. I don't know yeah. if that's real. How's that possible?
Lab-grown meat. So every atom of carbon that lands in the diamond was previously warming the planet.
That's crazy. Crazy.
I know. And so this company, Ether Diamonds, if you're about to get engaged, maybe send your significant other, whomever is buying the ring in your relationship. Maybe you're both going to be wearing rings. Check out Ether Diamonds. And it's spelled A-E-T-H-E-R because after 8 to 12 weeks of chemical transformation, you can have a diamond sitting on your finger that was actually good for the environment. A carbon negative diamond, not just a carbon neutral diamond.
I'm looking them up. They should definitely sponsor the podcast.
I know.
I don't know how this whole thing works. But going back to the idea of a waffle griddle, you know how they make waffle griddles that are like shaped like Mickey Mouse or whatever? Like, yeah. You know, could you make a diamond thing in the shape of like my face?
No.
And
Bethany.
Then a diamond comes out, Kathleen, looking like you, looking like me.
Bethany, the whole point of this is that these diamonds are not synthetic. They have to be cut down and polished and checked for clarity and blah, 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 the same way that diamonds in the devil's mouth are made.
But
okay?
If you're putting them in a griddle to make them happen, can you make those griddle little shapes, I don't know, a pleasant looking white lady? Like, it could be a podcast diamond.
Bethany, the griddle is more like an incubator than a griddle, but you know those plastic things where you can put hard-boiled eggs and then all of a sudden your hard-boiled egg is like in the shape of a mushroom?
Yeah, or it's like a square.
Yeah, or a square.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. You know what? I want a square diamond.
I think, Kathleen, ride with me on this.
Okay,
I think we get in touch with Ether Diamonds.
Yeah,
and we're
like,
hey, we're a fairly moderately successful podcast. Could we make an acquired taste diamond? And it's shaped like
a vampire tooth.
A vampire tooth.
Or a dagger.
But you flip it one way, it's a vampire tooth. You flip it the other way, it's a cat ear, Kathleen.
Like swimsuits, where you can flip them inside out and there's two different patterns.
Yeah, one of them represents you, one of them represents me. Can't lose.
I'm in for it. Yep. Let's do it. Ether Diamonds, are you listening? 2022 is wrapping up and we are all setting goals for 2023. And some of my goals are definitely financial goals. And that's why Bethany and I are so proud to be partners with Chime.
Chime is awesome. If you have bad credit or if you're trying to create credit for yourself, this is what Chime does. With their secured Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can start to build credit with your own money.
Chime reports your payments to the credit bureaus to help you build credit over time, and their members see an increase of 30 points on average. That is a lot.
There are a lot of goals you can make for the new year. One of them is to become a billionaire. One of them is to, you know, get that booty you've been looking to get, girl. But if you're looking to have good credit, Chime is something you can actually do and actually, you know, have realistic results.
Yes. And with Chime, there are no annual fees, no large security deposits or credit checks to apply.
And it's a Visa credit card. It's not some weird credit card you've never heard of before. Almost everyone takes Visa. It's Visa. You know Visa. It's Visa.
Yeah, Visa. So to start your credit journey with Chime, signing up only takes 2 minutes and it doesn't affect your credit score.
Get started at chime.com/taste.
That's chime.com/taste.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by Stride Bank NA, pursuant to a license from Visa USA. Chime checking account and $200 qualifying direct deposit required to apply for the secured Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card. Regular on-time payment history can have a positive impact on your credit score. Impact to score may vary and some user scores may not improve. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal fees may apply, except at MoneyPass ATM in a 7-Eleven or any Allpoint or Visa Plus Alliance ATM. I love 7-Elevens. Yes, we are already looking towards the new year, but we are also looking towards self-improvement as we head into the holidays. And that is why Kathleen and I have been super curious and really big fans of microdosing, especially thanks to LumiLab's microdose gummies, because gummies makes everything a little bit more fun.
And if you're like me, when I first heard the term microdosing, I was like, oh, I'm not so sure about it. But when I actually really learned what it was and tried it, I am now a devoted microdosing fan. So basically what it is that LumiLabs has all of these different delicious gummies that you can choose from in different flavors and with different doses of THC. And it's not like the type of THC dose that gets you really high.
Yeah, they're not giving you the level of THC where you'll leave your family behind and join a bus. They're giving you the level of THC that helps center you in the moment.
It is such a small dose that I really just feel more like myself. It helps me get my creative juices flowing. And with the new year coming up, I'm going to use microdose gummies as a part of my routine to be the best version of myself that I can be.
If you're someone who creates stuff, yeah, it gives you that boost of creativity. It takes away the noise, but it keeps you being you.
I have a lot of friends who love microdosing, and they do it to feel healthier and just perform better in their everyday lives.
And all sorts of people are microdosing, by the way. People who run businesses, people who are artists, people who have families. It's actually more common than you would think. And Lumi Labs is a wonderful way to start because they make it super precise. You take the certain number of gummies you want for the result you want, and it gives you a sense of control as you try this new thing for yourself.
So Lumi Labs microdose gummies are available nationwide.
To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use the code TASTE to get free shipping and 30% off your first order.
Links can be found in our show description, but again, that's microdose.com and then use the code TASTE.
Kathleen, we are in the holidays. I just spent time with my two nieces. Well, one of my nieces. The other one was very sick.
Oh, no.
Not COVID. She just was like, you know, had like the flu or something. She had like 103 point something temperature. They had to put her in a tepid bath.
Oh, my God. That sounds horrible, but also relaxing at the same time.
Kathleen, I got to tell you, she had the best Thanksgiving of all of us because while I'm out and about, you know, just trying really hard to socialize, I ducked into my mom's bedroom to check on her. She was wrapped in a blanket. She had headphones on. She was eating food that kept getting brought to her, and she was just watching TV on a laptop. I'm like, you're having the best day.
So jealous. Nobody's taken care of me like that in a really long time.
No, absolutely not. And so if you have, you know, cool kids in your life, cool fellow teens, this might be fun stuff to do with them, is play these dangerous games to play in the dark. I highly recommend this book. It's by Lucia Peters. And I'm just going to take you through like three of the games that she recommends, okay?
Who's playing Twister anyway?
No one, unless you're in college and you're naked.
Did you ever play Twister in middle school at a sleepover?
Oh, absolutely. I love Twister.
It was the game that like came out the second the sleepover started.
Totally. And it was an opportunity also to show how flexible you are. And flexibility was the only thing I excelled at in gym class. And it, you know, if you were a little bit older and maybe you had a crush on someone, maybe you got to be close to them without, you know, having to be weird and asking if you could, you know, straddle their back.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Especially, especially when it was co-ed for me because, you know, I like them boys.
Hell yeah, you do like them boys, you big slut. Okay.
Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary. Bloody Mary.
Okay, this is called the closet game.
Oh.
Okay.
Making out in the closet.
7 minutes in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Do people still play that?
I can't even imagine kissing for 7 minutes straight.
It's a long time.
When you and Dennis make out, Bethany, do you make out how long? A minute? 2 minutes?
I mean, a minute.
Maybe, right?
If we can even make out. Kathleen, we still are not good at like getting close enough to each other to kiss. When I try to kiss him goodnight, we aim so badly. Kathleen, 99% of the time we try to kiss, one of us is kissing like a lower chin. Two of the most physically awkward people you've ever met have found each other but can't seem to kiss.
Okay, I'm going to come over and give you lessons.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. All right, so this is called the closet game. Here's how to play.
Mm-hmm.
First, you have to choose, Kathleen.
Yeah.
A closet.
Oh, okay. Easy enough.
Yeah. You want to avoid choosing a closet you use regularly in your everyday life, okay?
Okay. Who has a closet like that in their house, though?
I don't know. I'm in my library right now, which is just a bedroom, and there's a closet in here I don't use very often. I would maybe use this closet.
Okay.
Like maybe a storage closet.
I have so much shit that I use every day. I don't know.
Okay. So once you find your closet, okay, you have to gather your supplies so you have them nearby, and all you need is just a book of matches.
Oh, easy enough.
Yeah. Easy peasy. Then you must wait until nightfall. Why are you laughing? This is serious and scary.
Because you're already in bed, so you're not playing this game.
No, you're right. I've been asleep for 3 hours at least. All right. When it's dark outside, turn out the lights of the room in which the closet is located and draw the curtains or block out the windows so that there's no light coming in. And also, if there's a light in the closet, make sure you turn that off too.
Ooh, fancy light in the closet.
I know. If you're one of them richy riches and you have a light in your closet.
Yeah, I have those peel and stick lights from Amazon in my closet.
Those are helpful.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Take your matches with you. Step into the closet.
Okay.
Unless you're one of our LGBTQ listeners, in which case we prefer you out.
Yes, we much prefer you out. Find a small room so you don't have to go back in the closet.
No. You deserve to be who you are. Mm-hmm. Love is love. All right. Mm-hmm. So step inside the closet, close the door behind you. If there is any light visible either inside the closet or from outside of it, you got to open up that door. You got to exit the closet. The game simply will not work.
You need one of those door stops that old ladies love to stop the wind from coming in the front door.
Like those long bean bags.
Yeah, you need
one of those. So if it doesn't work, you have to try again when you have ensured that no light can be seen once you're in the closet. Okay. Mm. All right. Okay. So, but if you've made it this far, face the closed closet door. All right. Mm-hmm. So you walk into the closet, you close the door, you turn around, you face the door.
Yeah.
Stand in the darkness for at least 2 minutes.
Oh my God. 2 minutes alone with my thoughts in the dark.
Oh, that's the biggest horror of them all.
Yeah, it is.
Now here's the problem. Because it's dark out, you're not going to be able to like watch a clock.
Yeah.
To monitor 2 minutes.
One Mississippi, two Mississippi.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what you have to do. So you have to count the 2 minutes in your head as accurately as possible. Do not move. Do not speak. Do not make any noise.
Oh my God.
All right. Now, once you have passed the 2 minute threshold, hold one unlit match out in front of you and say, show me the light or leave me in darkness.
Oh.
Then listen closely. Listen well, she says. If you hear nothing, do not turn around. Exit the closet immediately. Your ritual has failed.
No.
But
yeah.
If you hear a soft hiss, a slight rustling, a whisper, light the match immediately. If the match goes out, light another one immediately. Do not fail to light the match immediately, okay?
I cannot light a match inside my closet. First of all, there's not even enough room for me to be in there. Second of all, I keep a lot of flammable paint supplies in all of my closets.
Why all of them?
Because it's a smattering of art throughout the house.
I feel like maybe you should have chosen a different closet, but it's too late. You've made it this far. You have to move forward.
All right, maybe I'll squeeze myself into the snack pantry.
That sounds really good. Okay, so if you've made it this far, now the match is lit.
Yeah.
Slowly open the door and exit the closet, closing the door behind you once you're out. Do not allow the match to go out while you perform this action, and do not, under any circumstances, look inside the closet.
I feel like that's a large ask, keeping this match lit. I mean, you got to do it quickly.
Yeah, they burn quickly.
Yeah, unless you have one of those fancy long matches with the really long stick.
Like the Duraflame ones?
Yeah.
I like those. Don't look inside the closet ever again.
What? Get out of here.
Or not without all the lights in the room on, okay? Just without all the lights in the room on. Keep the lights on if you ever look in that closet. Leave the door shut from here on out, they say.
Who lives in that closet now?
They say, I don't know. They say there's a reason it isn't considered wise to choose a closet for this game, which you regularly use for its intended purpose. If you open it again, there's no telling what you might let out. You have now created or invited a monster into this closet.
So really, truly, you want to not hear anything.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that your house is spirit free. So this is kind of like a spirit catcher.
Yes. And you know, they say if you hear nothing, the game has failed. I would say the game has succeeded.
Very well succeeded, indeed.
Because here's additional information that they give at the back. If you've completed this game, you may experience odd occurrences in the room in which the closet is located, especially at night, and especially if the closet door is left ajar. Some players report looking into the closet despite being warned not to.
Don't do it.
And seeing two small points of light deep inside, like a pair of lit matches, or perhaps like eyes.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh, this is fun. I might have to sleep over your house just so we can play some of these games.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
They say also that's likely what you're going to see, especially if you don't light your match in time. And they say one more thing. If you ever enter the room and find the closet door standing open, shut it immediately.
That's because the little leprechaun got out.
Yeah.
Nope. My accents are terrible.
No, that was exactly Irish. Okay, so that's the closet game.
Ooh, that's fun.
Are we scared?
Can I do it with somebody that I would like to kiss? You know?
I think so. They don't specify the number of people.
Yeah. So you like kiss for 2 minutes, wait to hear the rustling, and then you have two sets of hands to do the match, keeping the lighty on and closing the door.
Yeah. I think at least if you know that the person you're looking to make out with is like quick.
Yeah.
They're not going to panic and fumble and drop the matches, you know?
If they've had truffle mac and cheese, you're not stuck in that situation for too long.
Oh, God. I do love a truffle mac and cheese.
I don't. I can't. And someone once told me that truffles smelled like the breath of someone they made out with, and I can't ever forget that.
Oh, why'd they ruin it for you?
I know. I know.
All right. We're going to talk about the corner game.
Ooh. Okay. Okay.
Now, this arrived online in the early 2010s from Korean social media sites.
Okay.
Okay.
This is a great book, by the way. Not just for teens who do sleepovers, like for adults who are into spooky stuff.
No, this is super fun.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's how to play. All right. You're going to be summoning something probably. So just, you know, just know that ahead of time.
Okay.
Here's how to play. Choose your playing space. Okay, Kathleen. Uh-huh. You must choose a room with four walls, a floor, and a ceiling.
Hmm.
And it must have exactly four corners. I got to be honest. That's actually harder to find than you would think.
I am thinking of, I don't think this room exists in my house. At all.
It, like, I'm in a teeny tiny room, which I have turned into the library, but it has a tiny alcove that the door swings into. So that adds two more corners.
Can one of the walls have windows?
Definitely, but I think it just has to be like four walls.
Oh.
No additional weird, you know, the floor plan has to be a square or a rectangle.
What if you have corners, more corners on the ceiling, but four corners on the floor?
I think.
I know. I don't have one in my apartment. Mm-mm. It doesn't work for me. But, you know, if you have this perfect square room in your house.
If you have this unicorn of a room. All right. Choose your players.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need three of them, making the total number of players, including yourself, four.
Ooh, I like Greek games.
Yeah, me too. Lastly, designate one player to be the speaker with a capital S.
Oh, that's you, Bethany. You, me, Dennis.
So it's you, me, Neil, and Dennis.
Yes.
And I'll be the speaker.
Okay.
Prepare the playing space. Clear the building of all other people and any pets. So if we're doing it here, Minerva has to go somewhere else.
We literally cannot play in my building because last time I pulled the fire alarm, I got in big trouble.
Kathleen, you have to stop pulling the fire alarm just to get some alone time.
I'm just so mad about the recycling. The people who don't recycle properly.
Did you end up making that sign?
No, I didn't.
You should make that sign for sure.
I might. I might. In the new year, if people don't ship up, I'm shaping them out.
Okay, that's perfect. That's exactly how that phrase goes.
Yeah.
I can see you thinking. And don't think. It's perfect. Okay, so once you've cleared everyone out of the building, everyone, you have to go, I'm doing a thing.
Yeah, leave now.
Turn out every light in the building that is not located in the playing space. So like we would have to close all of the lights except the bedroom light.
Okay.
By the time you've completed your preparations, the only illuminated room in the building should be your playing space. This room with four corners.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we gather everyone. You, me, Neil, Dennis. We all gather at the entrance of the playing space, but we do not go inside yet.
This is some Squid Game shit, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Marco Polo. Red light, green light. One at a time, cross the threshold into the playing space.
Okay.
As each player enters the room, they must speak their own name aloud three times. Then, once they're inside the room, they must remain silent. So, like, you walk over the threshold into the bedroom and you go, Kathleen, Kathleen, Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go, Bethany, 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 etc.
Pick a corner.
Yeah, pick a corner. After the players have entered the playing space, close the door, turn off all the lights. Do not speak. Until the game's end, the only player who may speak is the speaker.
Okay.
Except in the event of an emergency. If you have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. But what kind of emergency are you going to have when you're playing this kind of game? Like, ugh.
If we're playing, you know, with Dennis,
yeah,
he would say, I'm a vegan.
Yeah.
And we all know, oh, he has to go to the bathroom.
Do these cheese doodles have real cheese?
Yeah. And the answer is yes. And then he has to go to the bathroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's lactose intolerant, you better watch your diet before you play this game.
Yeah, even if you smell cheese, some people are like, woo,
oof-da.
It excavated me.
Yeah, it diamond mined me, you know? All right, position one player in each corner of the room facing the walls with their backs to the center of the room. This is a real Blair Witch position you're taking.
Yeah, have I been a bad girl?
Yes, exactly. All of the players must occupy a corner, and no corner may hold more than one player. No corner may be left empty. That's why you need four corners and four people.
Okay.
When all of the players have been properly positioned, the speaker should count to three, after which all players must move clockwise, that's toward your right, to the next corner of the room.
Hmm.
Players should not turn around or face the center of the room. Keep facing the wall as you move. Do not speak.
Got it. That is easy rules to follow.
Right. After the first rotation has completed, the speaker should count to three again. One, two, three. Everyone rotates again to the next corner of the room clockwise.
Okay.
Okay. Continue until all of the players have occupied each corner of the room one time.
Okay.
All right. So you've made a full circle. To end the game, the speaker should indicate to all players to gather by the light switch. Don't turn around. Don't face the center of the room, but you may make your way to the light switch. Make sure you remain facing the wall at all times. You're going to kind of have to walk backwards.
Okay.
When everyone's gathered at the switch, place your hands on the switch together. Then speak your own names backward three times.
What is your name backward?
Ineteb. Ineteb. Ineteb.
I'm Neth.
Neth. Nihlak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Turn on the lights. If everyone is present, open the door and exit the room.
You survived.
If you have gotten this far, the game is complete. But.
Mm-hmm.
So step six was gathering by the light switch and saying your name backwards three times. That's number six.
Uh-huh.
Step six may only be completed if all players remain present for the entire game. It is possible that a player might disappear at some point. Should a player disappear, you have encountered an emergency situation. And we're not talking about the vegan kind. Proceed to step seven if someone goes missing.
Okay, what's step seven?
All right, if a player disappears, the speaker should indicate to the remaining players that emergency measures must be taken. This is so exciting.
Don't call 911.
No, they're not going to believe you.
No.
To enact these emergency measures, each player must speak their own name aloud backwards three times, then turn to face the center of the room and press their backs up against the wall.
Oh.
This is so exciting.
Was it like when someone is going to kiss you real hard and they slam you against the wall?
Okay, remind me never to play with you when you're this horny.
I don't know why I keep thinking about makeout games at sleepovers. I don't know why.
We had very different sleepover games, I think, you and
yeah,
I.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I was not a cute kid, so my sleepover games were like, let's all do witchy stuff because no one wanted to make out with me, and that's fine.
Neither was I, but I was talented with the makeup brush.
Okay, so everyone's pressed their backs up against the wall. The player nearest the light switch said then turn on the lights, all right?
Mm-hmm.
If these emergency measures have been carried out successfully, the vanished player should reappear when the lights come back on. And I bet they'll have a story.
Oh, because they've been to the other side.
I don't know where they've been, but they haven't been here.
They've been to the inside out.
If when the lights return, the number of people in the room is four, and those people are all the original players, the speaker should indicate to the players to gather by the light switch and enact the closing ceremony where you say your name backwards three times, like in step six, okay? But if an additional figure who is not any of the players is observed in the room following the completion of the emergency measures.
Yikes.
Then don't talk to it. If Derek suddenly shows up, don't talk to Derek.
I mean, Derek came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm going to have questions for Derek, though.
No, Kathleen, do not speak to this thing. The speaker should indicate to the players to gather by the light switch, enact the closing ceremony described in step six, making sure not to speak to or address the additional figure at any point.
So, but what if Derek doesn't go away? What if he's just there? Do you have to abandon this room like you abandoned the closet in the last game?
Unknown.
You lock Derek in and then you get charged with kidnapping.
The next step is one you hate to see in your instructions for a scary ceremony. Okay. It says, cross your fingers and hope for the best.
Oh, my God.
Now.
You know, I feel like it started out real wholesome, and then it was like, best of luck if you conjure anything evil.
I know. It's real bad. All right. Step nine. If you're all able to exit the room, despite Derek being in there, close the door behind you. You may want to stay out of that room for a while.
We cannot just keep abandoning rooms in the house. I only have three rooms in the house to begin with.
Yeah. Now, there's some additional information, like what to do if you accidentally bump into each other. You know, should you have like some hand signals you're all working off of? Blah, blah, blah.
Someone's playing footsie with you?
Yeah. And at the end, it says, if a player has gone missing at any point and does not reappear after performing the emergency measures, you may no longer be able to complete the game. Don't let that happen.
Okay, but then mom and dad are going to come pick you up eventually and you have to go home.
Yeah.
And then does somebody haunt you the rest of their life? And if you're the child that disappeared, your parents are like, hey, you have to finish the Four Corners game.
Well, yeah. And if you're the one who like is having the sleepover And the parents come to pick up, you know, Nelly, and Nelly is stuck in the wall.
Yeah.
You're in trouble.
Bethany. You know, this is precisely the type of game that is perfect for a sleepover because there's no hard and fast outcome. It's like, did it work? Did it not? Nobody knows.
Yep.
Do we feel spooky? We sure do.
Yep. Also, do we now have an attachment? Probably.
Oh, and then that attachment can be like the underlying joke of you and your pals from, you know, sixth grade to high school or whatever.
I know, totally. And then, but you can all also have like a real big secret where no one says what happened to Nelly, but you all know, you know, she's inside the wall at your childhood house.
She is, yeah. She was captain of the softball team, but now she's captain of the nothing team inside the sheetrock wall, the something,
Pobre Nelly.
Yeah. Ooh, give me one really more spooky one.
Okay. This is a classic. I love this. It's so silly. It's the elevator game. Do you know the elevator game?
No, I don't know it.
This is classic creepypasta. This is wonderful. You can find YouTube videos of people doing the elevator game.
Okay.
I will say this was a theory as to what Elisa Lam was doing in the elevator during that awful, awful security footage when she went, you know, missing in L.A. That was not this. That was awful mental illness. She passed away in the water tank. Awful, awful, sad, sad story. That is not this. She was not playing the elevator game.
Okay.
That was a real thing.
Got it. But was the elevator game made like based on the video that was released of her before she passed away?
I think it made the elevator game get more eyes on it.
Got it.
But I think the elevator game was around before that.
Got it.
Okay. So here's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You got to choose your playing field. And I don't mean baseball. Okay. You have to be in a building at least 10 stories high and it has to have an elevator. If you don't have a building 10 stories high and you don't have an elevator, why do you think you're going to play the elevator game?
We can't play at my apartment. No. Sorry, Bethany. We only have 6 stories here.
But not tall enough.
4 stories short. That's the tagline of my memoir.
All right. You have to you have to memorize the following sequence of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 5.
4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 5.
Yep. And you have to know it so well so that in case you panic, you still know it.
Okay.
4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 5.
April, February, June, February, October, May.
Wow. That's very good.
That's how I remembered it.
Jennifer. Yeah. I always have to go through all the months. You just know it. That's impressive. Okay. Go to your chosen building. Call the elevator from the ground floor and enter it when it arrives alone. Okay.
So you have to have access at the ground floor.
Yes.
Can't be a building where only maintenance can get in the basement.
Right. Totally. And also, you can play at any time of day, but it's probably better to play it at night because you can't do it if anyone is present in the elevator when you begin.
A lot of large asks for clearing buildings in this book.
Totally. They assume you have more power than you have. All right. Remember the numbers that you memorized?
Mm-hmm.
This is the order in which you're going to visit the floors of the building.
Mm.
So you're going to press the button for the fourth floor.
Yeah.
When the elevator arrives at the fourth floor, don't get off. You stay on. You immediately press the button for the second floor, right?
Got
4, 2, 6. Then you go to the sixth floor, then 2, then 10, then 5.
Okay.
All right. Now, when you get to the fifth floor and the doors open,
a
young woman may enter the elevator.
Oh.
Do not look at her. Do not speak to her. She is not what she seems.
No, I'm like, are you Susan who keeps getting packages from Macy's? What are you buying?
Oh my God. Don't say that to her, Kathleen. She is not what she seems.
I tried that keto cereal too and I like it. Can I come over for a snacky snack sometime?
It's super good, Susan.
Yeah, I see her getting those packages.
Okay. After visiting all the floors in the sequence, press the button for the first floor. When you do that, one of two things will definitely occur.
Oh.
Either the elevator will descend to the ground floor or it may ascend to the 10th floor. If the elevator descends to the ground floor, the ritual has not succeeded. Exit immediately once the doors open. Don't look back and don't speak.
Take the staircase every day moving forward.
Yeah. You may have created some type of portal. But if the elevator ascends to the 10th floor, congratulations.
Ooh.
The ritual has succeeded. Don't celebrate yet, though, the book says, because you're only halfway through.
Oh, man, I've got Haagen-Dazs waiting in the freezer.
It's going to have to wait a little bit longer there, Sugar Plum, because you got to go to the 10th floor.
Okay.
When the doors open, you will be faced with a choice. You may either remain in the elevator on the 10th floor or you may exit. if you choose to remain in the elevator, immediately press the button for the first floor. Mm-hmm. You may experience some difficulty with this step, but just keep pushing it.
Ooh, like somebody's trying to stop you from doing it. Yeah. But you're like, I'm going to push button one.
And if the button one doesn't work, keep pressing it until it works, no matter how many times it takes for the elevator to begin moving. Exit the elevator as soon as the doors open at the ground floor. Don't look back. Don't speak. Leave the building immediately.
Okay, do you have to abandon this building too?
Yeah. But that's if you want to be safe. If you arrive on the 10th floor and you're feeling bold, you may choose to exit the elevator on the 10th floor. Go ahead and explore. You'll be the only person there. Mm-hmm. But don't venture too far, because you will need to be able to find your way back to the elevator in order to return to your own world. That's right. You're in a different world.
Cool. Oh, I wonder what year it is.
Oh, gosh. 1982?
That would be great.
Yeah.
What happened in 82? I don't remember.
The old fire of 82.
Oh.
Burned down half the village.
Half the village.
Yeah.
So sad. I'll go back and save them.
Thank you.
With my fire extinguisher that I bring from the future.
Yes, because they had definitely, the fire extinguishers are for sure new technology.
You have to do this in a building that you don't live, because if you have to leave the building and never come back,
right,
it would be a real shame for you to abandon your home.
I know, but you have to, you know. By the way, if a young woman entered on the 5th floor, she will take this opportunity to ask you where you're going. Do not answer her. Don't look at her. Don't speak to her.
Okay. She's not there.
So you've wandered around the 10th floor. Mm-hmm. Some say, it doesn't say it here, which is interesting. I've heard it said that you'll know you're in the other world because you'll see out of the window of the 10th floor a red cross in the distance.
Oh, a red cross. I thought you were going to say, like, the carpets were nicer and the walls had a fresh coat of paint on them.
I know. You'd never want to leave, though, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
All right. When you're ready to return home, make your way back to the elevator. You must use the same elevator to return as the one in which you arrived.
Oh. Okay.
Recall the sequence of numbers you memorized. Do you remember what those numbers were?
April, February, 4252.
Nope, you've died now. You're never getting home.
Dang it.
4, 2, 6, 2, 10, 5.
That's right. I forgot about June.
So send the elevator to each one of those floors in order one more time, beginning with the 4th floor, ending with the 5th. If the young woman is still in the elevator with you, you should be familiar with the rules by now. Don't look at her. Don't talk to her. When you reach the 5th floor, which is the last one, press the button for the 1st floor. At this point, Kathleen, the elevator will again begin to rise to the 10th floor.
What?
But before it reaches the 10th floor, press the button for any other floor in order to cancel the ascension. You must cancel the ascension before the elevator returns to the 10th floor.
Wait, this would be a really good premise for an escape room.
Oh, gosh. Yes, it would.
Right?
I wonder if they've done it.
I just made us millionaires. I thought of the best idea ever.
Kathleen, when you reach the ground floor, do not exit the elevator immediately.
All I want to do is go home.
You can't yet.
Get a coffee at Starbucks or something.
Nope, not yet. You have to examine your surroundings. If anything seems odd, unusual, or incorrect, remain aboard. Press the button for the 4th floor. Repeat the numerical floor sequence until your surroundings once again look like they should. Now, when you are positive that the elevator has returned to the correct ground floor, you may safely exit. Step 10 is think twice about using that elevator ever again.
Bethany, what if I don't like my life and I just want to stay in the upside down world?
I mean, that's your choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, here's some notes. If any other person gets on the elevator at any point during the ritual and it's not the woman from the 5th floor, you fucked up somehow. Okay. The ritual failed. You have to go to the ground floor, leave the building.
Find a new building and
find a new one.
Hope that the spooky gal is the only one you see.
Yeah. Exactly what you will see on the 10th floor varies. Some people say the world in which you will find yourself will appear virtually identical to your own, but two details will stand out. Every single light will be off, and if you look out the windows, you'll be able to see a red cross looming in the distance.
That doesn't scare me that much.
I think it's terrifying. It's not like a hospital red cross. It's like a glowing neon red cross.
I mean, what would really be terrifying is if every door had a live, laugh, love doormat. God.
The scariest! It's also not known whether electronic devices like phones or cameras work, so you might not be able to, you know, tweet.
That's fine. I'm kind of over Twitter anyway. It's totally cool.
Also, like, the time may not work on the 10th floor. You might become disoriented. You might feel like the elevator is getting further away. Yeah. You might fall asleep, which is a problem.
I see why this is problematic.
Yeah. Here's one more thing, and this is the scariest of all. If you faint or go to sleep at any point while playing this game, you'll wake up to find yourself in your own bed with no memory of how you got there. You'll want to take stock of your surroundings, however. What looks like your own bed in your own home in your own world may not, in fact, be yours. And being fooled by a nap is the scariest thing of all.
If you are like me, the holidays have your stress levels, your stress hormones.
Stress hormones are through the roof.
Reaching epic earthquake-inducing levels inside of your body.
Yeah, it makes your head want to explode. That is why Kathleen and I love Next Evo Naturals. Next Evo is helping you take away some of the stress, some of the sleeping problems from the holiday season.
Yeah, and Next Evo Stress CBD Complex gummies are clinically proven to have 4 times better absorption than standard CBD. No other CBD brand can promise that. So, you know, like the random bodega that sells CBD products, Next Evo is not like that. These are high quality CBD gummies that Bethany and I have both tried, used, and liked.
Oh, yeah.
And we are proud partners of Next Evo.
We have Next Evo CBD gummies in the door of our fridge right now because when we need to sleep at night, I don't want to be taking something stronger because I don't want to wake up in the middle of the night and drive my car while I'm asleep. CBD helps deliver me the right amount of relaxation, stress relief, sleepiness, depending on how much I take, to get my brain to shut the hell up and I can actually get some sleep. Or if I take less, I can actually calm down and, you know, interact with my family, go to the airport.
You know, it's funny you say going to the airport because I always travel with my Next Evo CBD gummies because whether you're traveling through time zones or sleeping in an uncomfortable bed, it just helps me cope with this time of year in general.
And Next Evo Naturals Stress CBD Complex gummies are clinically proven to reduce stress by 70%. They have ashwagandha, that plus CBD work together to target your source of rising stress hormones like cortisol.
Yeah.
And it is the only brand that combines a patented natural whole plant ashwagandha, which is 8 times more powerful than regular ashwagandha.
So get smarter CBD from Next Evo Naturals and get up to 25% off subscription orders of $40 or more at nextevo.com/podcast and then use the promo code TASTE.
That's nextevo.com/podcast, promo code TASTE.
I feel like I need some schooling, some mental health schooling.
Oh, great. Okay, great. What do you need?
Because I don't know the difference between a psychopath and a sociopath. And sometimes I feel like I use those words interchangeably.
I think a lot of people do. I also don't know the difference. I feel like one of them knows they're doing bad things and that they shouldn't, but they don't care. And the other one like isn't aware. I don't know.
Okay. I found a cool infographic chart on Pinterest.
I love an infographic chart.
So a psychopath lacks guilt, remorse, and empathy.
Okay.
But a sociopath lacks remorse, but guilt and empathy may be present in some cases.
Oh.
You know, this is a really interesting infograph. I'll include the link to it in the show notes. The psychopath is a businessman dressed up in a suit and tie.
Yeah.
And the sociopath is wearing like a prison shirt with his prison number like embroidered on the shirt.
Okay, wait. Okay, so say this one more time. A psychopath lacks what?
Has no guilt, no remorse, no empathy.
And so that's why they're such good business people.
Oh.
Because they don't care that they're firing a huge proportion of their workforce and that those people won't be able to pay for their children's meals. They don't care.
They don't care.
So like it's only the bottom line. And so their businesses often do very well because they're not hampered by worrying about their employees.
So the sociopath doesn't have any remorse, but sometimes guilt and empathy are present in some cases.
So they might feel badly for firing you, but they don't regret it. They're like, I'd do it again.
But it had to be done.
It had to be done. Golly, don't you feel like life would be so much easier if you were a psychopath?
Or if people who were like this, myself included, if we just had labels that people could see you for what you were and they could just accept you. So someone's labeled a psychopath. Yeah. Hello, my name is psychopath.
John Q. Psychopath.
Hello, my name is Kathleen ADHD.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is
Bethany. Crippling depression.
Crippling depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
And then people wouldn't have to really get to know you before deciding that they didn't like you.
You mean people could judge me based solely on my mental illness?
No, not just you, Bethany, like the collective you, you know?
Yeah, my mom would be Anne Marie neurotypical, which is like crazy.
Neil would be Neil neurotypical too.
Which is weird.
I don't understand that. Like as a neurodivergent person, I just don't know what it's like to feel balanced 70, 80, 95% of the time.
But that's actually really fun. I would love to meet like Andy Autism.
Yes.
You know, you're just like, if people knew my name to be Bethany Crippling Depression and Anxiety, it would automatically explain why I'm so awful at ordering food because I overthink it and then I get tongue tied and then I feel bad and then I get embarrassed.
And, you know, sometimes if you're on the spectrum, if you have autism, people think that you're rude.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's just the way that your brain works. So wouldn't it be really lovely for people just be like, oh, there's Andrea. She is on the spectrum. She's not avoiding eye contact with me because she thinks I'm ugly and my breath is bad. That's just the way she is.
Right. Totally. Andrea Autism. Need you say more? Well, actually, yes, because we're all complicated, but it is an interesting thought. So I feel like if you are a psychopath.
Yeah.
It's easier to move through the world.
It is.
Because you are not hampered by any of like the second thoughts,
mm-mm.
the sadness for others.
Yeah, that's why psychopaths, like you said, tend to be really successful. Like this infographic says, tends to be really successful.
I feel like, you know, if I play my cards right, I want to come back in my next life as a house cat. Because like all you have to do is sleep and eat.
Yeah.
But like maybe I also want to come back as a psychopath.
Or maybe a psychopath house cat.
Maybe a psychopath house cat. I think all cats are psychopaths. Truly.
Yeah.
Truly, truly.
Okay, so here's another difference between psychopaths and sociopaths according to this infographic. Psychopaths pretend to feel emotion.
Uh-oh.
They don't feel anything. But sociopaths, they feel some emotion, like rage.
The desire to fire people.
Yeah, but the emotions that they do feel are shallow and fleeting.
Oof.
So a sociopath is, as far as we know, according to this infographic, is like somebody who was on the right road to being a psychopath, but didn't quite fully make it there.
I wonder, does it say anything about psychopaths being born and sociopaths being created?
Oh,
it feels like a real nature versus nurture thing, where I feel like if you had feelings, but you had like an awful childhood and then you become a sociopath.
It really fascinates me. And this is, I guess, why people major in psychology. when two children born from the same mother, whether they're twins separated at birth or, you know, siblings or whatever, when they're raised by different families and they turn out totally different, cases like that just absolutely fascinate me. Okay, yeah. So the next line, psychopath tends to be successful. Sociopath may form close attachments to one or few individuals.
Okay. So I think they're basing success like on monetarily and like career-wise.
Yeah. So I guess if you're a psychopath, you don't really form attachments. That's why you're successful because, you know, you are the only person you care about. But when you're a sociopath, you do have one or two, a handful of individuals that you may feel connections to and you look out for them.
Which, you know, it's only going to hold you back. Anytime.
Yeah.
You know, like John Wick was doing great. And then, but he had an emotional attachment to his wife and his dog, and they both disappeared, and all of a sudden he's on a killing spree.
Mm, true. Just a brutal.
It's exactly right.
Awful killing spree. Okay, here's a good difference between psychopath and sociopath. Psychopath, superficial charm. So they're very manipulative, but they are also charming.
Uh-oh.
And sociopaths are less charming. Like, people kind of see through it. Because they're aggressive and reckless and they tell a lot of lies and deceit people. Like, they break the law, they're irresponsible, and so it's easier to spot a sociopath than it is a psychopath.
That's so scary, the charm. Like,
I know.
You know, you immediately, I don't know, I immediately think about politicians where they're so charming because it's such a, like, yeah. The things you have to do to get to that level in your career, the people you have to get to side with you, what do you have to do in order to get all of those people on your side? And I'm not talking about voters. I'm talking about lobbyists.
Do you really love your country that much? Because I don't think I love anything that much.
I think even if you love your country, if you are a normal person, once you realize how much ass kissing you have to do and like getting people you despise on your side, again, I'm not talking about voters. I'm talking about lobbyists.
Yeah.
I think you have to sell a part of yourself.
And it would just be very tiring to keep everything straight because you kind of have to tell everybody what they want to hear.
Yeah.
Even if you are beating around the bush in some way and not necessarily making empty promises, you still kind of have to tell everybody what they want to hear.
Yeah.
Like, I'll work on it. I'll try my best. I'll see what I can do. It's very hard to keep that all straight.
You have to have someone who's keeping a spreadsheet. For sure.
Okay, so this, I'm on a different website now. I'll include it in the show notes. This makes more sense as to why the sociopath was in the jail uniform and the psychopath was in the businessman uniform.
Okay.
Because behavior by a psychopath is controlled. Like, they probably are very smart, very targeted in what they do. And a sociopath is erratic. So that's why they make rash decisions and they end up in jail.
They leave fingerprints. Yeah.
So criminal behavior of sociopaths, they tend to leave clues, act on impulse, but a psychopath tends to participate in schemes that take calculated risks to minimize evidence or exposure.
That's so scary.
Well, if I had to choose one, I would want to be a psychopath.
I totally want to be a psychopath. Yeah, you're out of jail and you don't feel anything.
And I'm wealthy.
Yeah, and you're wealthy. And you're wealthy.
In social relationships, it says, for a psychopath may appear to be normal on the surface. So at least you have that, right?
Yeah, I mean, as long as everything looks fine. But then again, like, if you break someone's heart, you're not feeling bad about it. You're moving on.
To your next pyramid scheme. You make $1 million.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. As long as you're on the top of that pyramid, you're doing great.
Bethany.
Kathleen.
What did you learn this week?
Okay. I learned that if you have like a mess of wires that all go to one outlet, you know, like one power strip, and you have a really hard time figuring out which is which.
We all do.
Take those little tags off of bread, wrap, you know, bread bags, those little twisty ties.
Yeah.
Write what the thing is attached to and then clip it to the base of the plug. So you always know, like, oh, this one's for the TV. This one's for, you know, the HD DVD player from 2001.
DVD.
Yeah, you know.
Oh my, what are you watching on that?
You know, current day tech. Kathleen, what did you learn this week?
I learned that dumpster diving is a really good workout.
So to whomst did you visit their dumpster?
I didn't visit a dumpster per se, but I was at the Pottery Barn outlet. And anytime you're at a furniture outlet, they have these giant boxes, cardboard boxes filled with all of the soft materials, right? Like all of the discounted blankets and pillows and sheets, they all just go into this bin, right? And when you need to find a pair of something, matching sheets, matching pillows, whatever, you really have to dive through those bins. And it is an excellent workout. And you could maybe make a business out of it, just saying.
Just like hire yourself out?
Like, yeah, you could stand there. Someone comes in, you're like, what are you looking for? Go to the store, go to the outlet store before anybody gets there. Organize everything. Someone's passing by, you say, what do you want?
What do you want?
Pay me $3.
Yeah.
And I'll go into that box and I'll get it for you and you make a living. No, yeah, you can't make a living that way.
you make a living until they kick you out of the Pottery Barn outlet store.
But you get a good workout in.
That's true. Kathleen, where can people find you on social media?
@KathleenLovesColor on everything. How about you, Bethany?
Radio Bethany on Twitter, Ms. Bethany Watson on Instagram. You can also follow our show on social media. Just search An Acquired Taste Podcast.
Yeah, we have a new Facebook group. Join that. Lots of cool stuff going on. What else is going on? Oh, we join our Patreon. We do live shows. We do book club. Patreon.com/AcquiredTaste.
You can also send us an email. hello@AcquiredTastePodcast.com.
You can send us some snail mail. An Acquired Taste Podcast, P.O. Box 1717, Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030.
Our podcast also has a bonus podcast that comes out twice a month on this very same feed. It's already in your podcast player. It's called The Check-In, and a new episode is coming out next Friday.
And Bethany, if people subscribe to Dennis's Patreon, they can see you record The Check-In live, right?
Absolutely. Patreon.com/DennisCallow, C-A-H-L-O. Speaking of other podcasts, Kathleen, what is your other podcast called?
Oh, it's called Kathleen Can Do It, a podcast about DIY and design.
Awesome. Awesome. It's a very good show. I think that's that. This is your weekly reminder to take a deep breath. And Taste Buds, here is what you had to say this week.
Hi, guys, and Taste Buds. Contractor Colby here. I just had to say that I started testosterone about 6 months ago, and I am starting to get gray hairs, and I am so excited. My dad went fully gray at 25, and I am just hoping this testosterone pulls that out so I can be gray. Just had to stop and say that. Bye, guys.
Hi, ladies. It's Sam from Ohio. I was just listening to Kathleen's segment on saying no, specifically invitations. But yesterday I was at Walmart picking up some very quick items, and a girl stopped me and she was trying to sell me some kind of energy, something to go on my energy bill, blah, blah, right? So I'm standing there and I'm trying to be so nice and genuinely listen to her spiel because I thought, oh, maybe I'll be interested in this. But I decided I wasn't. It sounded like a scheme. So I just said, you know what? Thanks so much. I'm not really interested at the moment. And of course, her job is to get me to be interested. So she keeps saying, like, what if I had a gift card? What if I do this? What if I up this? Blah, 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 blah. And I have my baby and I'm just trying to finish my grocery shopping and now I'm kind of annoyed. And so I looked at her and I said, what's your company name? Maybe I'll Google you when I get home. Can you email me some information so that I can talk to my husband about it? But of course she can't take no for an answer. And I know this. I know this is part of her job. So finally, I just was standing there and I was thinking, my father, a man in America, would never be expected to stand here and make excuses as to why he maybe needs this product or should listen to this person out of pity when I'm not going to get her product. And so I looked at her and I said, I'm not interested. I'm going to walk away now. And I did. And it just made me think of what Kathleen was saying, which is, you know, sometimes when it's when you're talking to a friend, you need to be gentle and kind. But sometimes when you're declining a coworker invitation or something else, that they don't need sad, pitiful excuses from you. You can just say, I'm not interested right now. Thank you. Bye. So I hope this empowers women to start just saying no. Have a great day.
Hi, Bethany. Hi, Kathleen. It's Nika, your Eastern Pennsylvania taste bud, and also Nika the Strange from Twitch. So I'm calling because I just listened to the recent podcast episode, and I have been going gray since I was 13 years old, and I'm 34. So pretty much all the gray hair started in the back, but now it's going towards the front, and I actually love it. A lot of people always compliment me on my gray hair. I mean, it's totally changed the texture of my hair, but I would never dye it. I think it's just way too much upkeep. So, and Vic loves it. You know, Vic never tells me like, oh, you should dye your hair and stuff like that. No, I think he likes it better than I do. But yeah, I just wanted to share that. Bye.
Hi, ladies. Local taste bud here from Jersey. I just finished listening to your passive-aggressive comeback for Thanksgiving episode, and Bethany shared how she learned this week that using fabric softener is just not okay, and I agree, it totally sucks, but I wanted to take the opportunity to share that what you totally should be using is vinegar as a natural softener, if you already didn't know. And also, while I'm here, to share that Jersey has two great refill shops in Montclair and Maplewood where you can go in and refill laundry detergent. They also carry laundry strips, and you could also get vinegar. They specifically sell cleaning vinegar for you to use for all cleaning purposes and as a fabric softener replacement. I just thought of all things to encourage me to call. This was it, because I try my best to just be friendly to the environment, and I hope that this piece of information is helpful to either you, Bethany, or you, Kathleen, as well. Love you, girls. Your podcast is amazing, and, well, hope you have a great night.